Welcome. Good afternoon. How are you? We are a small but mighty group, I can see. I'm going to leave the door open for a little bit longer because I've heard that the M-STEP session has turned people away and they might trickle in to find us. But welcome. I'm really glad that you're here. My name is Heather Vaughn Southard, and I'm the Professional Learning Director for the MIA Project, which is Michigan Arts Education Instruction and Assessment. And I am here this afternoon joined by Andrea Murray, who is a music educator with Ann Arbor Public Schools and has been working with us in multiple phases of the MIA project, and also Jeffrey Cuff, who is the Chief Operating Officer with MZ Development, and he'll be giving you a demonstration of the technology that we've been using in one of our most recent initiatives. So the overview of today's presentation is that we will introduce you to the work of MIA, and we'll also introduce you to how we are defining communities of practice in professional learning. We will be experiencing what performance assessment is, because although we might have, you know, this lodged in our mind of what we expect it to be and what we think it is, and then experiencing it can often be a very different experience. We'll have an overview of what our collaborative scoring system has been like, and I'd like for you to hold in your mind as we move through today's information that although this project is arts-based, and we would love for you to be engaging in our resources and inviting us into your areas to provide some professional learning and support your educators in using the arts, we would also like you to think of this as a model for what could be used for performance assessment and collaborative scoring in other discipline areas. So this could certainly relate to language arts, math, social studies, and science. So the more experiential the learning, the more applicable the work that you'll experience in today. And then we'll move through how we've used some of this within demonstrating educator effectiveness in community building, and then of course getting teachers to assemble in like-minded groups. So MIA, our tagline is Advancing Creativity in Education, and these are the four main driving principles behind our work, and it's the only slide that I'll actually read to you, and I'll expand on that. MIA is developed by the Michigan Assessment Consortium. We receive funding from Michigan Department of Education, Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs, and Data Recognition Corporation have all been critical in the development of all of these resources. They've been designed with the idea that we will be improving the quality of arts education programs, that we are monitoring and improving student learning within the arts, and as we move through the creative process, that the arts experience is just as well-rounded within those disciplines as arts are included in a well-rounded education overall for students, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit, that we're supporting professional practice and improving teacher effectiveness, that the resources are to help us understand the stories that are happening in our classrooms, in our buildings, in our districts, in our programs, that we have resources that help us create some very actionable steps to include the arts in school improvement planning and continuous improvement at the building level and at the district level, and that we are continuing to advance arts as a core element of public education. So again, that the arts are a component of serving that whole child, and then we also serve the whole child within the creative process experience in the arts. And so here we are. We've arrived at MIA. Michigan Arts Education Instruction and Assessment is quite a mouthful. And we say that we're changing the landscape of arts assessment at all levels. And while that's true, especially in terms of how we understand data to be collected from arts disciplines, the work that we're providing really builds on the actual experiences that arts students and arts teachers have in their classroom. So it's not so much a change of that landscape, but an amplification of that landscape. So that, for example, we're using performance assessment in a way that keeps dancers dancing and keeps musicians making music, and you can translate that to the other disciplines so that the experience of the student isn't taken out of what is normal practice in the arts learning process. Within this, we've created a blueprint, and I have copies of that for you if you'd like to take one today. We've also established a program review tool, and then we have 360 arts assessments in dance, theater, music, and visual art. So we're actually the most comprehensive set of resources in arts assessment that exist, which makes me feel like a superhero to be on this team of superheroes and to have the honor to share this with others. But it's also a really it's a unique and dynamic position to place arts educators, because often we are the folks who are sort of left behind in the professional learning process, where PD is offered and then it's left up to the arts educator to make the connections to their own content area. So for once, we're also leading the charge that with concrete methods of how we can assess learning in experiential ways, and then those arts leaders can become leaders within their buildings to help teachers of other discipline areas develop that practice within their classrooms as well. So here's Maya on the map. The red dots are the places in which we've been presenting. We have multiple ways for educators to interact with us, and when I say that, I'm including central and building administrators in that definition of educators as well. We are spread out throughout the state of Michigan, and we're expanding that population of people who are implementing the resources, as well as those that are being introduced to it. And then we are also getting a lot of invitations and requests from around the country for us to be able to share these resources in districts and also state-level agencies and arts associations nationwide. And so what are the resources? So when we think about program improvement, we have a blueprint for high-quality arts education. And this really goes into the detail of what's the infrastructures that we need in place in order for us to function well. We've backed that with research and recommendations within the four disciplines that we include, so dance, theater, music, and visual art. When we were writing each stage of the arts resources, we had team leads and teams of arts educators, over 1,000 arts educators, in fact, within this entire process, that were bringing to us the research that has been backed nationwide and so forth that's relevant to their field, so that when we were creating the blueprint, we could be very accurate and clear with the recommendations that we were making, such as how many minutes should students be in class, what should that classroom environment or facility look like, and much more. And then we've translated that work also into the program review tool. So again, this is an opportunity for arts educators at the classroom level to partner with administrators at the building or central level, where they can create actionable steps based on the data that they have. Here's where we are. We're not going to be held, in a punitive manner for where we are, but we need to turn this into a growth mindset and how do we get to where we would like to go. And so that this tool helps all of those people facilitate that change. And then on the aspect of promoting student learning, we have the assessment specifications that are relevant to the assessment items. And as I mentioned, we've got the model of performance assessments. These are included within grade spans K2, 3, 5, 6, 8, and then high school. And I'll talk a little more about that in just a moment. So in performance assessment, as I've mentioned, it's critical that students are continuing the work that they know that this class consists of, right? So that visual artists are continuing to create art and that we're developing the tools that we need to assess it within a curriculum-embedded way. And so that's what our assessment items are doing. It doesn't feel like a separate task or a foreign entity. It becomes part of the regular classroom habit. This combination does include some selected response or constructed response. So they're still writing relevant to the arts. And sometimes we're just getting that base knowledge of, do you have the definition? Do you understand what this concept is? My background has been in dance. So for me, to understand what a student knows, for example, if they're looking to turn, it's important to me that they understand alignment and posture and the difference between those things. But it's very different for them to be able to then execute it. If they have ribs that splay forward and a pelvis that tips back, do they have the understanding of how they can pull that back into a functional alignment so that allows them to transition from a single turn to a double turn, triple, and so on and so forth? So we need that balanced system of understanding what a student knows and how do we know that they know it. So our performance assessments are tasks and events, and they usually do include a selected response and or a constructed response. But the bulk of this is the artist continuing to make art. So in our definition, the task is a long-term situation, which these terms, at least in the arts, are flipped from what we expect them to be. So a task, as an example, might be the concert that takes place at the end of a semester. It could be work that is done in class and out of class. A student might be continuing to work on their drawings outside and then continue to post them for the gallery that takes place at the end of the semester. And our events would be short, like sight reading or quick study ability in our performance work. So in the way that we have built the assessment items, as I said, for grades K-8, we've divided them into grade spans, K-2, 3, 5, 6, 8. And then for the model assessments at the high school level, rather than using grade level, we've used levels 1, 2, 3, and 4. So an example would be we might have a senior who's for the first time taking an arts class, and they would be a level 1 student. We might have a senior who's been taking arts for 4 years or for more than 4 years, and so they would be a level 4. In our reality, sometimes we have those students within the same class, or sometimes they're in separate classes. So we also provide guidance to teachers as to how they can modify the assessments to suit their needs, as well as how to differentiate in the use of the assessment items based on the instruction and the needs that are in the students in front of them. And in doing that, we have created the assessment items based on standards, which I'll talk again. And so you might find similar standards that have been written for multiple age groups. So we could use, if you've got a ninth grade student who's a first year or has just moved into your district, let's say it's semester 2, you might find an assessment item that might be sixth grade but would be more appropriate for them to use versus the ninth grade version for whatever that student is moving through. So we provide guidance as how differentiation can occur as well. So how can teachers use the assessments? So these can be used in a formative process. They can also be summative in how they recap what a student has learned. So we use them to inform current instruction. So, you know, in the arts, we're constantly giving immediate feedback, and students are also moving always through a self-assessment in everything that they're doing. This is authentic, you know, as authentic as it can get. We're also looking to improve student learning and achievement. So these resources give us even more refined opportunities to clarify the conversations that we have about students. Here's what we're looking for and how we're looking for it to be. We're looking at this as a portion of educator effectiveness. So how do we tell the stories of what's happening in the success of our students? And in our situation, it's really common that an administrator is not well-versed in our discipline area. So we have the opportunity to use the Maya resources in a number of ways. One, it's not just one educator who's making up the test, to which we can say, well, what's the question of reliability? How are, as you know, was demonstrated earlier today, depending on how we write those assessment items or those questions, you can stack the deck in terms of, you know, how well a student's going to do. These have been created by over 1,000 arts educators. They've gone through writing, editing, field testing, you know, reliability and bias. All of that has been part of that process, and there's 90 to choose from in each discipline. So then when we share with educators how to score and report on the Maya assessment, we also take them through a variety of models for that as well. So in our experience, a first-year arts educator is looking for a different kind of data and story than a more seasoned educator. So we can explain to them the differences of why they might choose different samples or et cetera in the story that they're attempting to tell. And then how do they convey that in an effective way that makes sense to their administrator who may never have interacted with their discipline? In dance, I see that most commonly is a part of their own history. And then we look at to improve future instruction and program improvement. So we understand what's happening in the classroom, but then how does that accumulate over time and in scale so that we're looking at the comprehensive programming as well as the blueprint indicators that help us understand what we need in order for those programs to thrive and to survive. So we've talked a little bit about all of this, but at this point I'd like to invite Andrea to join us and to lead you through one example of a Maya assessment.
That's always a good sign. So in class, we have been discussing the idea of as music moves up on your page, you are getting higher in pitch, and as it is lower on your page, you're moving lower in pitch as well. And so, like, we in class have been practicing. And the students are, as the pitch goes higher, they're moving their hand higher in the air. And as the pitch goes lower, they're moving their hand lower in the air. And if it stays the same, they're just keeping their hand in the same place. So let's practice together, okay? It'll be easy, I promise. So here's our starting pitch. And then whether you think it goes up or down, move your hand where you think it's going. We're all rock stars. Very nicely done. So based on what we would see from our students, that would help us formatively decide if we need to do some reteaching or some more practice or if we're kind of ready to move on. So you are all rock stars, so we're going to move on. And so now we're going to listen to a song, and you're going to do the same activity, but now with a very familiar song that you sure have heard many times. Well done, well done, well done. And we might continue to practice with many songs as still just the muscle movement of moving our body and our arms up and down. We might experience more where, like, we're talking about shape of the line. Is it very smooth and connected? Our arms might go in a more flowing motion. If it is more militaristic-like and more rigid, we might move this way around. Then the next step after that would be for them to kind of draw it on their page. Okay, we're going to keep using our hands just because that is kind of helps me to see what's going on. I'm sure you've heard this song too. Oh, it's not very loud. We're getting there, I promise. Here we go. And then this one, the nice thing about this piece, it's very repetitive. So students who might not have got it right at the beginning get a chance to listen and then get a chance to try again with the sound of music. This is another one where on their page where they're drawing it out, they might have a more fluid line of contour that they are doing versus this minuet. Might have a more rigid line going on because played on piano, it's not as connected as Julia Roberts Andrews singing Doe, a deer, a female deer. Thank you.
So a little later, we'll hear from Andrea again as she talks about her experience using the resources within her practice. But we'll continue to look at this slide as an example of how the information is experience at the top of the page. When you let me pause for a second, when you go to our website, all of these resources are available for free, and there's a catalog which you can search in order to look by standard. You could look by age group. You of course are looking at discipline. We have some tagged as to which could be used as arts integration, other things. So there's keywords that you can explore. They're written in such a way that we are so broad in the concept that the more broad you use in your search, the more items will come up. An example in dance would be that if I were to talk about some specific ballet terms, that narrows us into how that exists in curriculum and how many teachers might use that particular item. So I looked at specific core ideas such as elevations, the five basic elevations, rather than the ballet terminology. It's like 2 feet to 2 feet, 1 foot to the same foot, 1 foot to the other foot. These all have words, but that those ideas exist across all disciplines of dance and really movement function. So we're looking at what are the ways that teachers can find items that will naturally fit into their existing curriculum, and how do we also create items that might take educators into things that they've never considered teaching before, or at least in the way that we're suggesting that they teach it. So all of the sort of the detail information, the logistic information, is available at the top of each assessment item. And so that's what you're seeing here. There's a description of what this assessment item is. You'll notice that there's a teacher booklet and a student booklet. We have the PDF version, and then we also have a Word version. And that's because we encourage arts educators to make adjustments to the assessment based on their curricular needs and the needs of the students who are in front of them. We ask that they provide feedback on the assessment or how they've adapted it, so there's a button for them to be able to do that. And there's a summary of what this could look like in the right column. So that assessment information lists if it's a task or an event, which grade span, approximately how many minutes. And we've based that, again, back onto the recommendations made in the blueprint. So in reality, we know that, for example, some arts classes in the elementary are meeting for 30 minutes once a week. So there might be some assessment items that work great for that. And then there's going to be some that would just simply be so long that it would be difficult to do that when you're only seeing them once a week for 30 minutes. So we've taken that into consideration, but we've included that information quickly so that teachers can sift through what's going to work and what's not going to work in an effective way. In the assessment info, you'll also see that there's an educator effectiveness method listing. And so we've listed options 1, 2, or 3. One being, I'm going to test and retest in the same year, like a pre-post. Method 2 would be testing in 1 year and then the adjacent year, because our reality is that we are usually the single educator per discipline. So we see them all of their grades, K-6 possibly, or again, sometimes when they're in secondary, I would see them for multiple years. And then the third method would be this new old-fashioned way, which is essentially how do you select student work to be included within a portfolio and for that to be a snapshot of the greater picture of your teaching. And then we've listed the standards, the performance standard, the content standard, and the anchor standard, and all of these are aligned to Michigan standards and reference national standards as well. So that's easy and ready for any SLO building or comparable SLO version of things, depending on your evaluation process. And then you can also take a look at the rubric before you download and see the rest. So you can see here's the dimensions of an analytic rubric. So we're going 1 to 4 instead of 4 to 1. And then you'll notice that in some boxes, there's an opportunity to see exemplars. So when these were field tested, student work was recruited to provide those examples. And as Jeff will notice, will share when he gives you the demonstration of our collaborative scoring opportunity, there's ways in which student work could be flagged to be an exemplar moving forward. So for those squares that we don't have a current exemplar or we want more of, there's a process in place to provide us some support for that. Historically, in the Maya work, which has been in development over the last 8 years, we have continuously been touted for the fact that we use real educators to produce the work, that all of the feedback that we receive in the process gets applied, and therefore each product that we make continues to get refined, and that has been true of the collaborative scoring experience as well. So in the way that we're thinking about communities of practice, what we notice is we have teachers who are by discipline isolated or within small groups across the state. That can be true geographically as well. And then also like how they're approaching their content area. So we continuously strive to find ways to assemble arts educators so that they feel support and that they can feel as though they are part of a community, even if it is outside of their local district or their building. So sometimes they're the lone wolf in their general region, or sometimes they are within a very large district, but they are the single teacher within their discipline or building. And so it can be a very isolating and lonely experience. So one of the ways that we think about that are these continued initiatives. And so collaborative scoring has been our most recent. Within this particular experience, we are recruiting teachers who might be coming to us as individual practitioners, or they might be coming to us as a team of educators from their building or their districts. And when we invite them into the collaborative scoring experience, they could be one of those two things. They are represented from across Michigan. We have teachers who are in rural areas, suburban areas, and urban districts. And the goal of the MyCSS experience is that they are able to use the Maya resources to create relevant and reliable data, so that not only are they using resources that have been field tested, that's a very interesting sound. I thought we were going to be the weird ones, and I didn't even make you dance, you know, although there's still time. So we want them to be able to have an independent experience, but then we also want them to be able to develop their ear and their eye within their practice, and that can be something that's hard. As I mentioned before, PD is often delivered in some discipline, and then it's up to the arts educator to apply it to their own discipline. And so within this experience, there's very rich dialogue that can take place based on actual student work. So there's multiple ways that this can look. So some of the questions that an educator might be holding as they engage with our collaborative scoring experience are things like, how do I know what is good quality within my discipline? So, you know, I would say that in most arts training, we're sort of led to believe I know what good art looks like, and there's practice in that, but it wasn't in my teacher prep. That came from more professional-oriented, performance-oriented training. And so when I translate that into how am I evaluating and assessing my students, what bias am I holding when I am taking my student story into consideration when I score their work? How is that playing a role into the greater story or data collection? These are all things that, you know, make me want to deepen my understanding of assessment literacy, as well as reveal questions that I didn't even necessarily realize I still had in terms of my discipline and how it relates to the students that are in front of me. So if a student has never had any dance experience and they're telling me they want to have a career in dance, you know, that's a very different trajectory than a student who's in a private practice at a local studio. So how am I navigating all of those conversations? So this can be helpful in that. How can I gain more objectivity in the scoring process? Administrators will often say, oh, but the arts are so subjective. It's not so subjective when you're trained in the arts, but how do I talk about all of those pieces is something that we engage in as a group. And then how do I build the reliable data? That's also something that my administrator could understand because it's more comparable to what they might be seeing in other content areas. And then how do I find the people who want to answer these questions with me? Because sometimes, you know, there's the first adopters and then there's others. So here we are in Michigan Collaborative Scoring System. I'm going to hand it over to Jeff to give you a demonstration, and then we'll talk to Andrea again and, of course, all of you to find out what else you want to know.
Thank you. Let me get out of here. Join in here. You guys see that? No? Then check this part of it. I don't know why that wouldn't display. Bear with me. Here we go. All right, let me just log in here. So just some background. I met Heather and Dr. Ed Raber at the 2018, I think it was, NCSA conference. They were presenting on the Maya pilot, and I attended that session, and I raced to the front of the stage at the conclusion of the session to talk about OSCR, our online scoring and reporting platform, our flagship product, because I thought it was perfect for the work that they were doing with the MyCSS, the Michigan Collaborative Scoring Platform. And as we dug into it, I understood that this concept of teacher collaboration and administering performance tasks at the classroom level, as opposed to more of the traditional district level or state level scoring projects that OSCR accommodates, they needed a product that was really focused solely on the classroom teacher collaborative system or opportunity. And so we dug a little bit deeper and understood their requirements, and we built OSCR Classroom, which is built on the framework of OSCR to accommodate those very specific needs. We literally launched, I think it was almost a year ago to the date, in February of 2019. So we've been working with them for about a year in operation. So this platform, I'm going to give you kind of a preview of what it looks like from the teacher perspective. Manage my classes. I've been logged in here as a representative teacher. The way somebody becomes authorized to use this platform is they go to a registration page and they enter their profile information. As part of that information, they also enter their content area, their specialization of content, so music or dance. It can be ELA or math or science, what have you. The grades they teach, and optionally whether or not they are assigned to a particular team. So we can even silo the material to a particular group of users as well. And once they're approved, they receive an email that allows them to log into the site, and this is our staging environment representative of the material that we're housing for the Maya project, so the art material. So as a teacher, I have access to manage my classes and second resolution scoring. I also, for the purpose of this demonstration, have enabled reporting and configuring the system to give you a full look at it. But what I'm going to do here is dig into, so if I were a teacher teaching a class of students in the Maya program, I would come in to manage my classes, and I kind of have this virtual representation of the class, so I can create a demo class here. And based on my registration information, it's filtering down to the schools that are within my district, and so I can select the school that I'm teaching this particular class in and create it, and it creates a virtual container there within the platform for that particular class. And then from there, I can add students in a multitude of ways. I can add students one at a time. I can add them, or I can create a template file and upload it from a CSV, which would have a collection of students. It validates those students against the database for the district, so I'm not repeatedly adding these students. We also have done integration with Clever, too, so we can automate this whole procedure for you if you're a Clever district, and it can collect all that information directly from your student information system, and we're also one roster compliant as well. So anyway, you'd populate your students in there, and then you'd add the assessments that you're, in this case, the assessment that you're going to be teaching for that term. And so if I click in here and type in a couple letters, you can see that it starts to filter from the list of, in this case, over 350 performance assessment tasks based on the information that I've typed in here, as well as, again, the content areas that I've assigned myself to and the grades that I'm teaching. So this is going to give me kind of a subset, fourth grade, restaurant logo design, standards associated with that, and then a brief description of that particular assessment. And so I select that, and I can give it a custom name. And then I can also select whether I'm going to administer this as just a single administration, or there's going to be a pre- and post-test administration for the particular assessment that I'm administering. And I can put some custom notes in here as well, which are unique to the way that me as a teacher are teaching this particular performance assessment task. I'll explain that in a little more detail when I get into the actual scoring. So by adding that, I then add that performance task to this virtual classroom, and I now have a container for that class to enter information into it. So let me go back and go to a scenario here where I've kind of pre-populated some of that information. So you can see here I have several students that have been assigned to my class, and I've also incorporated that same restaurant logo design. So if I click on that tile, I now have a kind of a snapshot into the progress of this particular performance task within this class. So you can see, again, the students associated with the class, and I'll go over kind of the progress here, the progress and status on the left. But this this right side really kind of gives me a snapshot of where I am right now within the administration of that program. As Heather talked to as well, there are resources that are available. So the teacher booklet and the student booklet are available for me to look at. They open up a new tab in here, and I can scroll through that for information that's been assigned to this particular performance task. That can take the form of PDFs. It can be audio or video or training materials for the teacher or reference materials for the students for handout, what have you. Anything that can be kind of rendered within a web browser is available from resources as well. But I want to spend the lion's share of the time looking at this kind of snapshot of where I am within the assessment. A little more real estate. So this look here, these icons represent the status of the various tasks for each of the students. This first one indicates that the artifacts have been uploaded for the students. So a dark gray icon indicates that there's two, or that all of my students have artifacts that have been uploaded. In this case, I can hover over that and get a sense of the material that's there waiting to be scored. I can look at the status of the first score. So in this instance, the first score is always the teacher scoring. The teacher who's teaching those students, they apply the first score to that material. After that first score has been applied, this material is promoted to a group of their peers who also are trained in those same content areas. So this would be perhaps other teachers within that district who are also teaching or capable of teaching restaurant logo design. And so they become perhaps the second scores, or even a resolution score, an expert score to provide a resolution if there's not exact or adjacent alignment on the first and second score against those things. And so in this instance, I can see that I've scored it. I can see a resolution score has been applied. You can kind of see as I roll over this, I can see the status of each of those. And it's still pending a second score has been applied, and it's still pending a resolution score. And there are comments that are associated with this particular submission as well, and I'll show you how that works. But let's kind of walk through what I would experience as a teacher. In this instance, it indicates there are two students that have submitted material, or I've submitted it on their behalf, and it hasn't yet been scored. Just to give you a brief explanation, I can upload material directly as a teacher. So from this icon, I can click into an upload screen, and from here I can add files as I normally would, browse the computer, or we even have done integration with Google Drive, so each of the students' material would automatically be associated with their individual container within the platform. And you can see as I drag over these things, the material that's been associated with each of those students. So an easy way for teachers to upload the material. There's also a capability for me to generate, if I get back out here into the class, into the student, I can generate QR codes for all of the students that exist within the class. And if I click on this link here, you can see that the QR code, so if they use their camera with the QR codes, it opens up this link for a student. So now, if I look at what a student would see, they see now this interface that allows them to upload that information directly, whether it be from their Google Drive or from their iPhone or what have you. In the example we talked about, it may be an audio recording of their music or a video recording of their dance recital or a scan that they've done or a picture that they've taken. Anything can be uploaded as long as it's supported, as long as it can be rendered through a web browser. So any kind of material, they have some certain size limitations based on them. But in this instance, it indicates that I've already uploaded work here, so based upon the fact that it may be in some process of scoring, it's not allowing me to open, or it's not allowing me to upload anything else. So I'm gonna go back to that teacher interface, go back in here. I can also send emails to students as well that would say, listen, you haven't submitted any work, so they will receive an email that says, can you please submit work to this particular assignment? Gives them that same link that they would access with the QR code. And we can set submission windows as well. So I may not want material until I've gotten to a certain point through the administration of the performance task curriculum. And then I can set a deadline that says, well, you have to submit something by this deadline. Otherwise, the window closes and you won't be able to upload it as a student anymore either. So anyway, just to give you a sense of the upload process there. And then once the material is in the system, so now as a teacher, I'm going to click on this one particular project for Andy Jackson, and it opens that up, and you can kind of get a look at the heart and soul of the scoring system. I have some tools here on the left-hand side that allow me to kind of do some navigation for the material that's been uploaded. In this instance, it supports the concept of they've uploaded two different artifacts, so you could theoretically have a portfolio of material that students have uploaded into the platform that can take the form of multiple artifacts, so it could be a scan, it could be a PDF, and it could also be an audio file that they've uploaded. Remember earlier when I set up the performance assessment test, I talked about those special considerations or considerations for the particular administration. So as an example, I might be administering this restaurant logo design performance task and say, I want you to design a logo for an affluent restaurant within your community. And so that's something that the other scorers should be taking into consideration as they review this that falls outside of the standard material that would be referenced within the resources that are available within the platform as well. And so you can see that I have a way to look at the various resources associated with me. Here's the material that the student has submitted, and then here on the far right, let me just collapse this little window here. Here on the far right is where I enter the information around the project itself. And you can see towards the bottom, this is a multi-dimensional rubric. In fact, this is three separate components that would be scored, that would be uploaded by the student and then scored. And so the first one is multi-dimensional, these two dimensions against that, and then a second component would be against the reflection, and then an assessment, kind of a self-assessment, constructive response type response as well. And you can see as I roll over each of the score points, it provides me with a score point descriptor for that particular score point. So the concept here is being that because this is a classroom-based tool, we don't have the same level of training and practice and qualification that you might have in conventional performance scoring. So we want to enable the teachers with as many tools within the scoring environment as we can to ensure that they're scoring as accurately as possible. So as Heather mentioned, we also have, you can see this, you can probably see that, I don't know what the contrast is like up there. In some of the score points, we have this question mark in the upper left-hand corner. If I click on that question mark, it presents an exemplar for that particular trait and that particular score point. So that's an exemplar for a 3 within logo brainstorming to create meaning. If I click on the fourth question mark, it gives me what's representative of a 4 for the score point for that exemplar. And so I can use that as a comparison against what's been submitted by the student to say, well, how good is this one compared to what is considered a standard 4. And after I've reviewed the material, then I can actually apply the score by simply clicking on the score points that are associated with each of the dimensions there. In some areas, I might say, as an example, well, this finished logo is by far even better than exemplar 4, and I want to submit this as for consideration as an exemplar for future use. So this can be used as a means to actually build material for training and reference as you go through the program. This capability can be turned off or turned on based upon the user, so you might want to only give it to folks who are more expert scorers or more versed within the material. But I can say, for that one, let me submit that Harvey's Restaurant logo as a 4 for consideration by the administration as a future exemplar and escalate that to that point. And then subsequently, I still would need to submit my score for that particular item. That item has been scored. And you can now see Andy Jackson has a dark gray check mark associated with it. I have one more that's available for Ron Reagan to score, but you can get the sense of how that works. I can individually score them or sequentially score everything that's available to me as a teacher for the class. Once I've scored it, again, it's escalated to a group of peers. This has already had some activity that goes on there. So if I look at something that's been scored in this instance, it's been given a first score. It's been given a second score where you see there was an alignment in the final logo creation, and then it was moved on to resolution. So all three scores have been applied for this particular project, and ultimately that resolution score will stand. And here's that most important component of this. After the scoring is complete, or even while the scoring is going on, for the sake of this sandbox environment, these comments are relatively brief, but you can see how the first score provided comments when they submitted those scores along that rubric. The second score submitted their scores, so those may take the form of, the reason I scored this a 3 is because of X, Y, and Z, And the second scorer might have said, the reason I scored this was a 4 was because of A, B, and C. And that information is available to all the scorers as they review this material as a component of professional learning and professional development. So you can get exposed to how other teachers are looking at this same material and have a different perspective on what score should be applied there. And so that's obviously a really important component of this. And even though this is complete, that collaborative nature can continue on. So you could have an ongoing virtual conversation with the other scorers for as long as you care to. And you can also submit some student feedback in there as well, so it can be available for the student report too. So you can get a sense of how that works as it progresses through the scoring process. Depending upon how the resources you have available, the configuration within Oscar Classroom can be set to say, I want 100% of everything I score as a teacher to go through second scoring. But if it's perhaps an ELA district-wide administration, you might only say, I want only 20% of the teacher-scored material to go to a second score, and if necessary, resolution score. So you can calibrate it based upon the resources that you have available for that second and resolution scoring. And then over here to the left, you can kind of get a kind of a snapshot of how that inter-rater reliability is going for me as a teacher. So A, obviously I have a sense of how complete my project is, how many are remaining to be scored or waiting for second score or in fully complete status. But more importantly, how am I doing compared to, in this instance, this first score versus a second score? What's my agreement? Exact agreement by trait, and then in this instance, my exact or adjacent agreement by trait, and then overall. So it's a mechanism that provides these statistics that are obviously conventional for performance scoring to that teacher that gives them a real quick snapshot of how am I doing compared to the other scores. And how that's used can be dependent upon the rules that you're using within the administration of your program. But it's just a nice way for folks to kind of self-evaluate as they continue through the platform. And then there's reports at the classroom level, so I can see where my scores are across the entire classroom. And then also another way to kind of cut the statistics of the agreement in each of the traits and how I'm doing across the score points within that trait. Ideally, we would get a nice bell curve within each of those. And then my alignment, another way to look at that IIR where there's other scorers who are scoring higher than me or traditionally higher than me. And so just another mechanism to kind of leverage for professional learning of how I'm doing within my scoring. And then really quickly, just at a higher level, let me just talk briefly about, so as a teacher, I'm automatically enabled with that second scoring capability. These are other projects that I have signed up for to do second scoring or even perhaps resolution scoring. The system will actually suggest content for me to score based upon the content areas and the grades that I've included in as part of my profile. So it kind of does a little bit of the homework to make sure that the work is progressing through. And if I go in to score any of these things or second score, I'm not sure what's available, you can see that now, as opposed to seeing who the student is, it's anonymous to me as a second score. But in this instance, it's a little bit different because the material is different. The rubric is a little bit unique, but that interface is still common to the scoring system itself. And then lastly, I just want to talk quickly about the reporting capability. Throughout the platform, the reports are entirely configurable based on the user provisioning that you do. So you can set, as an example, a user at an administrative level that would just have access to a particular report or an administrator who has full access. But some of the nice reports that we have in here, the assessment stats. So as an administrator within the, So if I want to look at restaurant logo design, again, this is not a lot of material. These are all of the restaurant logo design assessment tasks that are being administered across my district. And so I can take a look at how the scoring is going overall. Again, a small kind of contingent to measure against, but how my first scores are comparing against my second scores, the distribution of the scores in there. We have a confusion matrix where we're looking to get a solid, you can't really see it probably, but a solid green line here, which indicates exact alignment. And then I can look at the variables out there that are adjacent. And then if I click on those, it brings me right to those two responses. So I can even dig in and see some of the information about those particular responses that are perhaps out of the ordinary or anomalies. And just also the completion report, which kind of gives me a snapshot of the entire program. These are all the performance tests within the various content areas that are currently being administered and where they stand in terms of how many have applied. The first score for the teachers, the second score, a resolution score. I'm looking to get 100% completion in this column for all of these tasks. So as an administrator, I can kind of prompt some of my teachers to say, you really got to get in there and do some second scoring before the end of the term to ensure that these students have their scores by the end of that term as well. So that's kind of a brief look at a snapshot. I want to be conscious of time. I could spend the rest of the afternoon going through a lot of the functions and features of this platform, but you get a sense for it. Again, this is within the arts. This is, and we've branded this the Michigan Collaborative Scoring System powered by Oscar Classroom, but we're looking to expand this into ELA, math, science, social studies, whatever content areas that are leveraging performance tasks can be used here as well. All right? Turn back over to Heather. Thank you.
Yeah. I can find. And then from current slide. There we go. You know when you like approach the board and you all of a sudden can't spell? Like that's how I feel about technology when I have an audience. Thank you, Jeff. So we're sharing that resource for you so that you understand how we're using it and how your educators can become part of our collaborative scoring experience, but then also that general information as to how it could be adapted for your needs outside of that. So the zoom in of why we have developed MyCSS is that, you know, as I had mentioned before, when we're just looking at assessment items and, you know, teachers are scoring tests that they've made themselves, that is, in, you know, has a lot of inherent challenges. And so we've created the assessment items. And then when we're using them in a collaborative scoring opportunity, it sort of builds that reliability and then also deepens the dialogue and the engagement that teachers and students have within that process. And then the zoom out is that, you know, we understand that central scoring is a really expensive and complicated endeavor. So when we can look at this in a more manageable experience, we can explore how that could be implemented at the district level in a variety of contexts. It's a rowdy bunch. All right, and so we've had the overview of the MyCSS. So in short, teachers have come to us as individuals or in small teams. They upload their work and score it. We have other blind participants who are scoring those same students' work and then resolution scores as they need. Feedback that we've received is that the reports that are generated have been really appreciated by administrators and by teachers because it's the ease and the functionality of that application. Even our most technologically challenged, as they have self-identified, teachers have really responded beautifully to the Oscar Classroom platform, that it's incredibly intuitive. And as we've done with all of the development of the Maya resources, this process has been no different in terms of all of the feedback that we'd received within field testing continues to go back into the process and refine. All right, and so we could pose the broader questions in terms of what would this look like for ELA and for math, and you know, what are those obstacles? And usually, it's the time and money are always the top two. So we want to, and we hope that the Maya experience can provide a snapshot as to how those things can be done in very direct and relatively inexpensive capacities, even in the creation of the performance assessment. So I don't necessarily want to use the word bank. I hesitate to use that word, but just in the opportunity to develop that catalog of assessment items, that has been a really effective and comprehensive experience that could be replicated across other discipline areas. And so that continues to drive our work. We've gone through our demonstration. Oh, there's a lot. Can I fast forward? So at this point, Andrea, would you provide some testimony in terms of how the Maya resources have been used and implemented within your teaching practice, your assessment practice? what students have experienced, and then also how that has translated into the conversations that you have with administrators and beyond. And I will advance us as you have that dialogue.
So fortunately, I work in Ann Arbor, where there are lots of music educators in our district, but I came from teaching in Kansas 12 years ago, where I was the only orchestra teacher for the entire district, and I wish at that time we had the Maya assessments available to us. It has opened my eyes to different ways to assess my high school orchestra, and the opportunity to discuss with other educators how they're using those assessments, and even the same assessments, how we might alter it and tweak it just a little bit to fit our classroom. The other huge part that I've gotten from it is with the collaborative scoring and seeing how other teachers have graded my work and where we align and where we don't align, and then kind of why those misalignments maybe happen, and what we can do in our teaching to kind of bring that closer together. There was another question that you asked me to talk about. I don't remember.
Conversations with administrators.
Oh, yes. With administrators, it's given some concrete evidence to show them. The reports are great that you can print out from Oscar Classroom. It gives nice reports on post-test and pre-test, and then kind of what we have done. We have sight reading SLOs, and there's a great Maya assessment on sight reading in there, but providing that data where I'm not, although I would love to create it, we don't always have the time to recreate everything. So my assessments are already in the Oscar Classroom and the reports are already generated there for me. So it has definitely sped up a lot of that preparing data to put in our evaluation system. The Oscar Classroom platform is amazing. It's so easy to use. So thank you, Jeff, for all that you've done with it, because it is just very wonderful.
So there's a variety of ways that arts educators and administrators can become involved with us. One opportunity that is upcoming is our Maya Institute, and this is a virtual experience that is offered through the summer. We use Western Michigan University's online platform. And the premise of this experience is that we pair an arts educator with their building administrator, preferably, so that they have an introduction to the Maya resources, they start using them and responding to them, and then within that they create a portfolio that includes these one-page talking points, so that, as an example, when they're comparing the school improvement plan for that school or district, and then we look at the blueprint and the research and recommendations for their arts discipline, they can help create some actionable items that could then become a part of their school or district improvement plan. And then we guide them through how do you know where you are within that process? How do you create those action steps? How do you revisit that over time? Within this, they also are looking to develop their arts assessment plan using the Maya resources. So which items am I using? When am I going to use them? Which method of scoring and reporting am I using to develop my data pool? And then I can share that in my final educator evaluation meeting. We're also helping them think through, so at the beginning of the academic year, what are the things that I have in mind that I want to put plant seeds in the minds of my administrator so that we can hit the ground running right from the beginning of the academic year and we're not starting right at the end. So they're really thoughtfully moving through that entire process. How am I identifying my professional learning goals? How is that changing my classroom practice? What's my assessment plan? How did that go? What's the data? What am I going to do next time? And I've provided two examples of what one or two educators had done. We try to make it as graphic and visual as possible because, of course, usually administrators are running down the hall and we're trying to share this information as best we can and as quickly as we can so that we can make the most of the meeting when we have it. So we guide through that process. The other ways that your teachers can find us would be through the website, of course. All of the resources are free to use. And we have video modules of how to use all of them. So why did we make them? How have we made them? How to implement them into their own practice. There's a general video module series, and then there's one specific to demonstrating educator effectiveness. And we also have four EduPaths courses. or introductory level into the same work. And then, as I said, the Maya Institute. So it's listed June 22nd through August 3rd. That it's done virtually and it's flexible so that it can accommodate their summer travel. There's only one face-to-face wrap-up meeting toward the end. I do have an early draft of that information. For the administrator, they get to choose their level of participation. They could go through the whole 6 weeks or they could just come to the wrap-up meeting. So, you know, we know that there's varying levels of engagement and varying levels of relationship that they have with their educators. So we want to be conscious and sensitive to that. Meanwhile, we want to support the arts educator to tell the best story that they can. In educator effectiveness, it can often feel like it's a process that's being done to us, and we have really shifted that sense of agency into how are we telling and how are we educating the people who need to evaluate what we do, and so that they can also celebrate what we do and then continue that conversation beyond us. And then we also have Maya Leadership Fellows, who are typically, they have been writers that started as in content teams. Sometimes they were team leads, sometimes they were participants. They've moved through the development of the resources, and then they are now spread out geographically across the state and supported by MCACA funds so that we can do presentations like this or different in your neck of the woods. So this could be an hour-long presentation, it could be half day, it could be full day. And within that, usually there's an introduction and an overview of all of the resources, and then there's ways that you can implement them. So they might be starting their assessment plan, they might be practicing how to modify and edit an assessment item or to look at differentiating in their classroom. So we give guidance in that. Sometimes we're invited back again, and when that's the case, or we have established a series of professional learning opportunities, then we're really walking them through each stage of that implementation so that their work deepens as well as broadens across the personnel within that district. And so if you're interested in those opportunities, then you would reach out to me. I coordinate those opportunities. And so there's my email address. Rumor has it that our PowerPoint looks incomplete in the version that you have. So if you want to take a version of it today, I can download that for you. We will also follow up with the conference teams to make sure that the right version gets updated. I also have blueprints of the Maya resources if you'd like that. And we have a handout on collaborative scoring and an executive summary. So whatever you need, we're here for you. What questions do you have? Or comments, concerns, or jokes for me or my fabulous team? I have excellent waiting time if we need it. No? Okay, so you know how to reach us. If you decide after today you've got questions, then by all means, please reach out. And otherwise, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you.
Yeah.